This guy, and I'm checking the mic, and the levels are pretty good, it seems like.
Here we go.
I'm recording, but if you want to check your mic.
I'm Colin, I talk like this loud.
And Ernest over here talks like this.
Okay, well, let's see here. Where do I start this?
All right. Hello, welcome to Indie Cred Podcast. I'm Zane.
I'm Colin.
And today we have guest Ernest Adams with us.
Hello.
How you doing, Ernest?
Hello there.
You guys may know Ernest from a show called Baskets on FX.
FX, yes.
You play the guy, you own the rodeo.
Mom Baskets owns the rodeo now. She bought it and the call went out to find Eddie. So they found me. And I manage it for Mom's.
Oh, okay. But in season one, you own it.
In season one, yeah, I was the Humane Society closed us.
Oh, yeah. Spoiler alert, guys.
Scripts, but in my character preparation, what it was, they found out that the clowns were headbutting the bulls. And somebody started complaining that the bulls were getting concussions.
So that wasn't in the show. That was
It was not. That was my character development.
Oh, very nice. Yeah, I like
so
that.
So that's why the Humane Society closed it.
Okay, yeah, all right. That's good to know.
How often when you're doing a role would you say you, like, as part of your character development, do you just, like, create a lot of backstory? Is that part of your process?
Well, I do a tremendous lot, yeah.
Okay.
I Stanislavski the hell out of there. Yes, I know they call it, what is it, a Mainzer technique?
Mm-hmm.
What's it called? That's not quite it. But I'm pretty sure it's patterned after the same, and that somebody came to the conclusion that Meisner was too prehistoric a term, not Meisner, but Stanislavski, you know, method acting.
Mm-hmm.
That's old-fashioned, let's call it Meisner, because it's 1980s or something, psychologists came up with that term.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think it's the same basic thing, and they updated it with a fancy handle.
Okay.
But you're real into that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You've been in some episodes of Portlandia, too, right?
I think four or five altogether. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
I joined it the second year, and I think I might have missed one of the rest of the eight because I was down here on a basket
shoot. Oh, yeah, okay. Is that you got, didn't you sort of get baskets through a Portlandia somehow?
Yes. Jonathan Crissell was the director of the basket of Portlandia, and I was getting down to my last couple of $1,000 and was teary eyed wondering what I was going to do with the cat. You know, if I had to go back to subsidized housing, or worse yet, to the shelters. And I started renting my rooms out and found some bad, evil people. Long story short, they broke my back, took my money. And,
oh, gosh, you know. Darn.
So anyway, when I got out of the hospital, I come home and here was this blessed news from Jonathan. Would you like this recurring role in a pilot for a weekly series, but it will be a recurring role if it's bought.
That was the basket.
Yeah, and that was the basket.
Wow.
So 2 months later in May, we went down and shot the pilot.
Wow.
Yeah. So it sounds like you kind of lived the life of your character in Baskets, which is a kind of a rough, tough cowboy.
Yeah, but guy. I didn't really have a lot to do with horses other than the ponies up at Alpenrose Dairy. Through the 50s, there was a clown up there named Rusty Nails, who was also the television clown where the kids all went for the cartoons.
Okay.
And when I got out of high school, I got in all kinds of shitty trouble with Mom, you know, and had to move out of the house, you know, drinking and partying in the back seat, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so Dad took me up to Alpenrose where, when he'd go on a tooth, that's where he'd end up working until he saved enough money to come home, you know. And he got me the job up there as the pony man, you know. So that's what, but ponies, you know, ponies aren't that much different from horses. And there was also a lot of Welsh ponies, and a lot of them were fancy ponies, you know, because it was a world-class show deal that they had there at the end of each fall, you know.
Okay.
And then the after the show deal, then the Wenatchee Youth Circus came in. It was a wonderful place. It's Grandpa's Pass now, and that's what they called old Grandpa Cadma. But it used to be an incredible place to take kids for the show deal and the Wenatchee Youth Circus.
What was that? Where was that at?
Alpenrose Dairy. They still have the softball tournaments, the national softball, you know, Little League softball tournaments up there.
Alpenrose Dairy. Is that in California up here?
It's in Oregon.
Oregon. Oh, yeah. Portland. You're from Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
We didn't get into that.
We missed all that.
Yeah. So he's from Portland.
Yeah.
Portlandia. And they flew you down here for baskets.
Yeah. Yeah,
which is where I just picked you up from your hotel, which is really close to where the garage we're recording at now. But wait, did they know that stuff about you when they gave you the job of baskets, or was that just coincidence?
Well, they asked me after I was hired. FX Channel asked me about my background, and that of course came up.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I was around, grew up on dairies a lot, so lots of time we had an old nag of a horse.
Yeah.
But as far as me being a rodeo cowboy, no, I was never that.
Well, you're not a rodeo cowboy, but it's just like, I mean, that's pretty close.
In my 20s, we worked on a ranch in Jackson Hole when we was as hippies going back to join the peace marches in places like Dallas, you know, and which wasn't as treacherous as it sounds, because the hippies were coming back, went away redneck boys, and were coming back with their hair all long and looking nappy and shit.
Yeah.
There was changes going on. But we worked on this dude ranch where the old boy, he was a Marine colonel, retired Marine colonel.
Mm-hmm.
And considering the times, he was incredibly liberal. He hired all us friggin' hippies.
Yeah.
Except the chick. He says, there's nothing I can do with her. I can't keep her in the bunkhouse. So she went back home to her folks.
Yeah.
But it wasn't cowboy and shit. We was driving a combine, you know.
Yeah.
And he wasn't selling beef. He couldn't afford to raise beef because the market was just all screwed up. So he was touristing out. You know, and having the fake rodeos at night with horses that were bucked out and shit.
Okay.
He had a bunch of old bucked out rodeo stock that he put on shows with for the tourists.
So, is bucked out, that's just like an old horse that doesn't have the fight left in him? Or?
It would still buck and would look and feel and everything, just like a bucking horse, but it just didn't have a lot left.
Okay.
You know?
It was putting on a show and that was it.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, it was juicing up outside and then coming in to one performance.
Mm-hmm.
Like a wrestler, like an old wrestler.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh, here's an interesting story. Season one ended with me on this piddle horse. His name is Toby. And I hope he hasn't passed yet, but he was 28 years old then. Oh. And his handlers who owned him got to talking to me about Toby. And he'd retired at the age of about 13. He'd been just every year the national grand champion cutting horse. So they retired him as an athlete and put him to work, started training him for shoots, you know, to do just Hollywood work.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, it got to where if he didn't want to go to a shoot, he'd lift up and start limping around.
The horse would fake it?
Yeah, it's faking. You know.
Yeah, he was doing Meisner technique as well.
Yeah, Meisner way. You
know. So finally, they kept calling the vet, and the vet finally told him, well, park that rig and trailer where you always park it, just put it away. And about 40 minutes after they put it away, he come out.
Frolicking?
Yeah, frolicking around the corral.
Nice.
And that's how they discovered him. He didn't want to get in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
So he'd just carry a hoof around and look pitiful.
That's hilarious. I love this horse.
Yeah, Toby was his name.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting on him like it's supposed to emulate downtown L.A., and I'm leaving town after they close the radio on my way down to Sarasota to rob the Glendale train. That season, I got quite a bit of leeway in in dialogue, you know? Like,
yeah, mm-hmm. That was one?
Season one.
Okay. Yeah. Man, I think I had the FX app and I was watching all of it. I think the last episode I saw was my favorite episode, the Cowboys episode.
Oh, yeah, that was a good episode. That's where I went to see my kid and give him my old beat-up gun.
And to see a prostitute.
Yeah, yeah.
Before that. Then you go see a son we've never seen that you have.
Yeah.
In the middle of nowhere, and you just give him a gun without saying anything, and you leave.
You got me in all kinds of trouble. You may as well have it. That right there is kind of what the Basket Show about. It is families that are borderline dysfunctional, maybe. Mm-hmm.
You know, like, yeah.
Some families, I think it's true in America today that some families you can't find five people who are functional.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, that might be a lot truer than a lot of us are aware of.
It's very true.
Yeah.
I mean, I witness it every day.
Yeah. And Baskets, I think, is about people who are that level and up, you know. They're not quite middle class. They're certainly not lower class because they're really cool folks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's how they deal with problems and how they solve them, you know, with a great deal of abundance of common sense.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I love it.
That's great.
Yeah.
So have you been acting for a long time, or was Portlandia kind of like your launch into it? Or
I started back to Portland State when I was just going on 39.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I call it, during the area that I call the second Great Depression of America.
Okay.
You know, I think it's not going to be very long before they'll start teaching the 80s and the tremendous just dump out of everything toward mm-hmm. American cars. The warranties on American cars went down to 1 year
because mm-hmm.
they had to make them so damn cheap.
Yeah.
And sell them so cheap to compete with the Oriental influx.
Yeah.
Driving material.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a horrible depression. I don't think it will be, but maybe not more than 30 years before they will start teaching that as the second depression.
Uh-huh.
And I lost my last job. It was with the city water department, and the particular city never could get a budget passed. So they were operating on like a 1929 budget, like $250,000 a year.
Uh-huh.
And every year we'd have to go out door to door and beg for them to come out and vote that they were going to support the water department.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
1 year they didn't.
Yeah, damn.
It said, fuck it.
And then you were out.
Yeah, yeah.
Fuck.
So anyway, as often happens to the working class. Sometimes when that happens, they go get drunk and they get arrested for DUI. You know, and I proved true to form. And I got to rapping with my attorney and found out about student financial aid and got hooked up with Portland State and uh-huh. so forth. Yeah. And that got me in a dense curriculum of the whole three-pronged curriculum of dance training, which is modern jazz, contemporary modern, and classical ballet.
Wow.
And unbeknownst to me, that tuned me in, I think, probably pretty much both for stage and for set work.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
The
ballet
positions, because that's why I'm sorry I'm talking so much.
No, go for it. That's what this is all about.
That's why ballet dancers took those positions before we had cameras, you know, in traditional ballet back to the 16th, 17th century and so forth, you know. Those positions are to show a particular angular of their profile, you know, to a particular block of people watching in the mm-hmm. crowds.
Wow. So at 39, you go to college and start the dance program. Like, that's amazing to me, because I know that takes,
yeah,
like...
Yeah, and the Lunchbox Theater program. I started getting cast in Lunchbox Theater.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of got a following. People got to tell me, hey, I see you in a lot of the Lunchboxes. And I got cast in one main stage production, and my first jazz teacher and my first ballet teacher left for New York, and I started drawing a blank on things. It was like something was ripped away. I couldn't concentrate.
Right.
And it was a really difficult play not to be able to concentrate in. It was called Marco Polo Sings a Solo. It has nothing to do with Marco Polo. It's an absurdist play.
Yeah.
And it takes place in the way future, where it's after Holocaust, and the only seven people left in the world are the president, his cabinet, and their wives, and they're all cheating on one another.
Okay.
And they're all trying to hide it, but they all know that everybody knows about it because they're the only people left on the world. And for a real kicker, they're down in the North Pole.
So you were... Wait, what is exactly a lunchbox theater?
Lunchbox theater is like... they're little small theaters about the size of the complex theaters that...
Okay. Oh, yeah, so like the pack. Yeah. Theater.
And then during lunch, they're on campus. It's in the theater arts building during lunch. You can go and you can see them.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
A 20 to 40 minute one act.
Oh, nice.
Very cool. So you were doing a lot of those.
Yeah.
Very, man, that's awesome.
So was the goal, when you went back to school, did you always have an interest in like acting and dance or... Did it happen happenstance?
Acting I did.
Uh-huh.
And writing, I always thought maybe I could write. But in the labor market, you know, guys in the labor market, even the grunt laborers, you know, they have some very political bullshit sessions during lunch or while they're working.
Absolutely.
And I developed keen interest in the political structure and maybe wasn't fully aware of it then, but could seem that maybe with the computers on the rising coming into the home, that there might be some realities and maybe a grunt coming out of a ditch line and getting elected to the legislature.
Right.
Because one of the senior gardeners that I worked under with the Park Bureau in Portland when I was only in my 20s, eventually he did. He got elected to the legislature and... Sorrowfully enough, in second term, he had a heart attack.
Oh, no.
especially if you're working for the city anyway, you know, go for it.
Yeah.
So you were thinking about that made you want to get into writing.
Yeah, well, I wanted that. Had an interest in journalism.
Okay.
Like I'd had some exposure to radio, you know, I knew how to queue up records.
Yeah.
You know, and I... had gained some familiarity with doing news copy and out at Mount Hood Community College. I came a term short of getting an associate's degree in what they called broadcast communications.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So radio just... production and technology.
Yeah.
The class they called it.
That's what I studied in college, actually. Yeah.
So you're just kind of dipping into everything a little bit, like all media, arts.
Yeah, I was wanting to be governor by now.
But in the background of wanting to be governor, the art stuff was going on.
Yeah.
And here you are because of that. Okay,
yeah.
That's crazy.
So did you have like any particular ambition about acting, or were you kind of just like you enjoyed like the act of performing? Did you think like a television career was down the line at all, or were you like solely focused on the political aspect of it?
Well, when I was a freshman in high school, the English teacher who... You know, I didn't know she was the English teacher and tried to date her up, and then I get the English class, and it's English. So anyway, I spent most of freshman year, you know, the fall term anyway, trying to impress her and horsing around, you know, being goofy.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did this interpretive reading thing, and I wasn't doing my homework, you know, I wouldn't do my homework. So I was way frigging behind her class. We did this interpretive reading thing, and I read some Edgar Allan Poe, two Edgar Allan Poe stories, and the Mark Antony speech, where he butters up the butts of both sides, you know, the factions who just dug the hell out of out of Caesar and the ones who hated him.
Yeah.
You know. And anyway, she said, okay, now you know what you can do.
Yeah.
So she made me go to a speech tournament to pass English, and then what was the first play she put me in? She sent me to the other English teacher, and she put me in a play called Write Me a Love Scene. And I played this writer who was a really good writer, but he was just incredibly shy with the one woman that he wanted.
Okay.
So he went to this other writer and wanted him to write him a love scene. And from there, the complications ensued. He picks someone up on the way to see her. He hasn't met her yet. So it turns into be, it's a nice little one-act farce.
So it sounds like you were being lazy, and then this teacher was like, no, you have potential, now you have to go do stuff.
Yeah.
And then you became an actor because of that.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
But I lost track of what I was saying. She gave a lecture in class one time after that. I had that one-act play, and I had a role in Little Abner as the mayor of Dog Patch, where I got to sing Don't That Take the Rag Off in the Bush and dance the sidestep, which is the same dance that the old governor of Texas does in Best Little Whorehouse in Texas.
Okay.
I guess because it's just traditional jazz, step ball change, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she gave this class lecture about what the union was like then. And, oh, man, that was horrid. I almost couldn't handle that. It sounded just like they had you all locked out, you know, that you had to have a job to get in the union, and you couldn't get in the union unless you had a job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's exactly the way it was written then and how they read it. And it was the Taft-Hartley Act, I think. The 1960s Taft-Hartley Labor Reconstruction Act,
mm-hmm.
that did 64 or 65, I think it was passed.
Yeah.
Not too long after she gave that class lecture.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Unions. You know all about unions.
I love the union, personally.
Because you're in the union.
Yeah, yeah.
Unions are good, yeah.
Yeah.
But I actually, it's funny, I had that same experience, because when I moved out to L.A., was that like 2010, I guess? And the union I was trying to get into was in a big hiring freeze back then. And so it was that same experience where it was like, oh, well, you need, you know, X amount of days on a union shoot in order to get into the local. And no one was hiring non-union people on union shows. So I ended up doing things like reality TV for years. Huh. Just like kind of waiting for my chance to get in.
For real years.
Yeah.
Like 3 years, 4 years.
4 years, yeah.
Crazy. Well, I guess inwardly I had decided at that time that it's what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that was just really shitty news to me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little disheartening when you, like, finally figured out, like, oh, yeah, like, this is something I'm actually, like, good at and I enjoy and would love to make a career out of this. By the way, there's no way to break in because of the way the union's set up.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that's kind of a shitty blow.
You gotta really love it
mm-hmm.
to keep doing it.
Yeah. So, really, you started back when you were just a kid in, like, some form, and then it sounds like you sort of, like, through, like, opportunity and circumstance.
I gave Bible readings at Sunday meetings, so mm-hmm. to speak. And a lot of them were from the books of Leviticus and Deuteronomy, that all it was listing the genealogy of all the tribes.
Oh, yeah, the real nitty-gritty.
And for some reason, at a young age, I found a way of making even those sound exciting, because, you know, they get so boring that I just have to throw a whip-ass story. And I have to acknowledge that that's what honed my ability to tell a story or to read something interpretively.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's an awesome experience to sort of know, like, when you just have, like, a natural sort of inclination towards something like that, especially performance, because, like, there's certain, I mean, not to be mean, but there's definitely certain people in the world that just don't get it and, like, can't hold people's attention or, you know, make it something interesting. Even like interesting material, you see like boring actor reading good material, and it's like, ugh, hard to watch.
Yeah, it's a bummer.
Oh, I've seen an interesting movie that I wanted to mention on your cast. I think I told you about it. It was at the Skins Festival, the mm-hmm. LA Skins Festival. And it's a movie called Indigenous, Missing Indigenous.
Mm-hmm.
My friend from Portland wrote and directed that movie. It's a 7-minute short.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about homeless women. Because if you have no people to advocate for you and you come up missing, that's all that happens to you is pigeonholed in that missing. They may as well put Indigenous missing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But then following her short last night at the Skins Festival, they played this full-length feature called, I should have had this out.
Sorry.
Yeah, the River. And it's about the Wolf family whose daughter was murdered. And then later, the stalker comes back for the mother. And in seeing the film, to me, it came across almost like this guy was targeting them as Indian due to the mother-daughter relationship, like the mother being the next step in command, you know, the chief to us.
Mm-hmm.
And he came back to her for her to rub it in as to how helpless their Indian women were, because their indigenous men couldn't protect them without being arrested and so mm-hmm. forth. That's all the shit that came to my mind anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You worked with her on a project, right?
With Crystal?
Yeah.
We're going to in December, and I met her at the final wrap for Portlandia.
Oh, okay.
Season 8 was the final show of that.
Mm-hmm.
She was at the final wrap. She's what's his name again? Steve Sinclair's daughter. Steve was one of the executive producers in Portlandia, I think.
Okay.
Yeah, she's
a very indie stuff going on.
She's a real smart person.
Okay, nice. Cool. Yeah, yeah. I knew there was some kind of connection there to those movies.
She makes film, does photographer, does macrame, about everything you can imagine.
Mm-hmm.
She makes casts.
Wait, like casts like if I broke my wrist?
Yeah, any kind of cast. Someone in their loop went goofy and shot himself. And somebody that who is close to him said that he would like to have the skull. So they accommodated him.
Whoa.
And
put it in the solution.
That's some Wayne Coyne shit.
Yeah, and he not only has, but what he did with the skull was he then took and he made several casts of it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so she made a cast of the skull.
Yeah.
That's like some Misfits shit as well.
Where the bullet went through. I know it sounds bizarre.
But yeah, yeah. You know? That's fascinating. Oh, my God.
That's pretty indie. Indie skull casting and talk here on IndieCred podcast.
Yeah, I looked at that and I said, my God, what is that? And she told me about it. It was one of her ex-husbands. One of his relics. But truthfully, she's a very normal girl.
Yeah,
no, I'm sure, I would have a bullet head skull in my house.
Her name is Zing Chime, and she's named just right. She's just a very zingy person.
Very cool.
I looked at that, and she told me what it was, and I said, yeah, that's what it is, all right. And you can see in the cast where the bullet
went. Oh, my gosh.
What was the name of the movie again?
Missing Indigenous.
Mm-hmm. Missing Indigenous.
The full-length film. Let me get that for you. It's in this here somewhere.
I'm glad you brought that book. I'll check it out. Guys, he's ruffling through a booklet. He's going to find the name of the movie. It's from the... I'm trying to get some visual aid.
Yeah.
To the podcast.
River of Silence. Yeah.
Okay. Is that a documentary? It sounds horrifying.
Actually, no, it's pretty much a drama.
Okay.
Anyway, the Indian family decides the way the white folks are processing the case,
mm-hmm.
they're not asking them at all the kind of questions you'd ask, you know, an American family, a white family.
Mm-hmm.
They're wanting to know, is she loose? Does she drink a lot? Did she run away from the reservation? Yeah.
Any way they can, like, blame the victim to take the onus off of them to actually solve the crime kind of shit.
I just saw Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, which is about a rape, and it's kind of like a similar thing. Yeah. The cops don't do fucking anything.
So what this family decides is we're Indians who can track them down better than us.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
This sounds awesome.
Yeah, it is. It's pretty, it's a powerful movie.
Mm-hmm. After the mysterious murder of her daughter, Helen Wolf sets out to find answers. Instead, the killer finds her River of Silence. That was my trailer for the movie.
Well read, Zane.
All right, well, cool.
It's a very powerful movie.
Yeah. It's also very on point for our podcast to talk about it. Indie Cred Podcast. Colin loves to say indie as...
Buck.
Yeah. Thank you for letting me say that.
Yeah, it is, yes. This was from the L.A. Skins Fest that I found out about. I was dialing up Jetsu and somehow ran across that.
Mm. Yeah, you've been doing...
Who Jetsu is.
The improv team.
Yes.
Jetsu.
Yeah.
So he performed with them at Erica's... at the Scramble Comedy.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Which is crazy. How did you get in touch with those guys to do improv together?
Angela Nording introduced me to them. I think it was season one when I was down here for season one.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. I think we were going to go out to a comedy club, which we did. And she said, maybe when we're through there, we can go and sit in with some friends of mine. And she introduced me to them.
Okay.
First, we were going to go early, and then she found out they're playing later.
Mm-hmm.
So we just went to an early one-hour show at one of the clubs.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know who we've seen. But...
So when you performed with them this, whatever, 2 weeks ago... was that the first time you guys performed together, or did
No, that was the second.
Okay.
Okay.
Angela, I met in an indie film that was directed and produced by Jason Rosenblatt from Portland.
Okay.
Called Vicious. And she got the Best Actress Award, a lot of Best Actress Awards at many different festivals for that. And it was a really good flick. It was about... the adult dancing student, you know, the
strip club?
The erotic dancing.
Mm-hmm. Erotic dancing.
Yeah. It was, she was a law student and she was being hit on by her professors, you know, or the guy at work to put out her else and was behind her rent. The landlord was trying to get in her pants. And she had needed all this money. And so she takes this bet from this complete sleaze bag who was just tipping her big, like a couple of thousand at a time. But as the story develops, you know, he's a purse stalker.
Mm.
But anyway, she makes this bet with him anyway to do marathon lap dances for large amounts of money. In the interim, of course, her boss is doing his little coke deals and all this shit.
Mm-hmm.
So the final scene in the movie, she gets rid of like two or three guys. Major one pain in the ass to her.
Yeah.
All at once, looks around and there's all the money, picks it up and puts it in the briefcase. And she leaves the last scene in like her best first class businessman walk with a big tuft of bills hanging out of the briefcase.
Nice. That's great.
It's a good flick.
Yeah. What was your character in that one?
I was a lap dance.
Oh, a customer. Yeah.
I was an old lap dance. Yeah.
That was a day work? Was that like 3 days of lap dance work? One day of lap dance?
Just one.
Yeah. Okay. We got it in one day. Would have taken us at least four.
Yeah, Zane's dreaming of the 3 days of lap dance work he gets to do one day as an actor. You'll get there, buddy.
One day is cool. Actually, I did one day. Sarah Newton.
Past guest, director Sarah Newton.
Super indie.
Mm-hmm.
Got a lap dance there.
Well, there you go, man. You did it.
Actually, I just had someone sit on my lap while other people got lap dances. But anyway, moving. That's enough of enough about my lap. I'm talking about Ernest's lap today.
Y'all.
So that's you knew you met her trying to get back into this talking about this lap dances. You mm-hmm. met her, and then was she at the screening this weekend when you went?
I didn't see her.
No. Oh, you know.
I was. But that's how you got connected with Jetso, Jed, and Juzo.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, they've always been. I think the first time I saw them must have been like 4 or 5 years ago, and I remember just being like blown away. I'd never seen something like. I've seen experimental comedy before, but that was really my first sort of like introduction towards like their whole like body movement, clowning, stuff like that. It's really bizarre and fascinating work. But I mean, with your like background in like dancing and stuff like that, I'm sure you've seen.
Yeah, I loved the found dancing when I was a lot younger.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
You say you started when you were 39?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's like just awesome to hear that you started all that when you're 39 and here you are in Baskets.
I'm surprised I didn't pop my hips out or dislocate some of my arms, you know, trying to overstretch. I know I overstretched at times, you know, trying to catch up, trying to force turn out. But
gives me hope though, because I was considering starting guitar and I was like, you know what, I'm too old.
Well, that's what I started to find. That is my body developed more flexibility, and then the dancing brought out abilities to maybe be put more patient on guitar.
Hmm.
Like, I still don't have a lot of training on guitar or keyboards.
Yeah.
But I can play either one some.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, or bass is what I've settled in for mostly, because I'm four string, you know.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of basses with a lot more strings on them now.
But nah, it's the classic four strings the way to go, though.
I think so. Yeah. If the other two get in the way on a guitar, you know.
Yeah.
No, I totally get that.
Yeah.
Because, I know, the reason I never learned was I learned incorrectly.
Yeah.
And I played this way for so long, I got stubborn, and then I just gave up trying to relearn.
Yeah.
So I just stopped playing altogether. But now that I've been picking it up, I'm like, ooh, I can kind of retrain it now because I forgot the other way. But yeah, it's all about tricking your body, I guess. Yeah.
That's funny you say that about, like, how the dancing, like, was it like a physical change? Like, when you were dancing and, like, stretching your body and sort of, like, being more in tune with yourself that you started getting more patient with the guitar? Or was it, like, a mental thing, like, sort of realizing you could push yourself to do different skills you may not have thought you had necessarily?
I'm just not sure.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's maybe it's your mental metabolism changing as you get older.
Mm-hmm.
What I started just listening to the music and trying to play along with it.
Okay.
Because I don't know what chords or what notes I'm playing. But if I know the music well enough, which, you know, old-fashioned Western swing that dates back to the 30s, all rocked up is what I like, you know, just really juice that shit up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's kind of like you just, in dancing, found the rhythm.
And then the rhythm's a lot to do with it.
Sure.
Body rhythms. I've always played a lot of basketball and baseball is what I settled in as an adult because I didn't want to get all banged up, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you get enough banged up at that, you know. But I found that improved my ability to move certain directions on the basketball floor.
Okay.
And I started experimenting around trying to throw left-handed for a while.
Okay.
And that didn't work so well. but I could still hit either. I think it sharpened my right-handed hitting up.
Okay. Yeah.
I always hit left-handed.
Yeah.
And could change to right.
I get that though, because I used to skateboard a lot, and you know, like usually you skate with like there's goofy stance and regular stance, and I was goofy stance when I was a kid. But the other day I got so banged up, I was like, maybe I'll just start, like, I'm brand new at it, and I'll start regular stance. And just start from scratch and stop trying to do all the stuff that I'm getting hurt at doing. So, yeah, it's like just trying to retrain the body to do whatever.
I think the stretching like that, you know, like you have a hemisphere down here and a hemisphere down here. And I think that type of stretching, you know, increases your ability to find each degree, you know, click, 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 like 360 degrees around.
Okay.
Or maybe you sometimes have sensations that you can, you know, spin your head around on your shoulders.
And then you can play the guitar. And that's how you learn how to play the guitar.
Right.
I just love that idea. I mean, like, it makes me want to take a dance class or something right now, honestly, because, like, I'm always feeling like there's got to be, you know, right now, especially in LA, I feel like the sort of exploratory nature of, you know, like creating stuff like that. Like, I'm still really trying to figure out, it's like, oh, well, what is like my thing? Am I going to end up doing this? Is it going to be props? Am I going to start writing more? Is it going to be performance? And like, I love like hearing this from you because it kind of like makes me feel like this sort of jack of all trades, like, adventurous nature of like at any time you can start doing anything and like fall in love with it or do it for a couple of years and decide it's not the thing and move on to something else and just like sort of constantly evolving. Like, that's really cool to hear like firsthand account of that sort of performance lifestyle, because it's, I don't know, it makes me feel better about the path I'm on, where I don't even know what path I'm on half the time, you know.
But it did start with, I had just got my back broken by a bunch of bad guys who stole my money.
That's true, yeah.
And then I got baskets.
Yeah, that's... You
know? Still not... I still kind of want to live that life, though.
Yeah, I mean, well, so what was the story there? Is that something you mind talking about? Like, these...
Oh, it was... she was supposed to be a student at Portland State.
Mm-hmm.
And he was from Calcutta. And I don't know just what the deal was. I think that he picked up on her and had her in a position where maybe he owed her money and shit, and she was hanging with him, hoping to get her money back. Anyway, it was just completely.
And you were renting your room to
them. Yeah, he was finding out he was from Calcutta. I just figured he must have been a. Street thief in Calcutta.
Oh, yeah. Mm.
That, you know, that's how he made his...
yeah. And then they just took... because they were living with
you. I think he picked her up somewhere and somehow got her in a dependent situation on her, or feeling like she was dependent on him anyway.
Whatever kind of bad guy manipulation bullshit stuff.
She might have given him money for rent to give me, and he never gave it to me and was lying to her.
Yeah.
And shit, you know.
Wow, Jesus.
Yeah.
And then you got baskets.
Yeah.
You didn't have to rent your room anymore. Are you still there, the place where it all went down?
No, I finally moved out to, I would have been there, but I got word ahead of time from my friend who managed the place that it was being sold and that the people buying it were not going to rent any of the units out, that they were going to put them all up for sale.
Uh-huh.
Because I guess property is selling so high now that
they could... Because of that damn Portlandia show.
Yeah.
And the show that got you all this job.
So I was fortunate enough to find this. It's a convenient house. What it was a mother-in-law cottage in the backyard of this other main house out on Cherry Street. And then over the years, they built a fence between the two properties. And it's a separate house now.
Nice.
It's a nice little
spot. Same as a studio apartment, only it is a separate house.
Okay.
Yeah, mother-in-law's cottage.
Yeah, yeah.
Sounds
nice
like
to have your own space with no one robbing and attacking you.
It's the best kept secret.
Yeah.
In town. You can't find it.
Yeah. It's in Portland and...
Yeah. Here's the... We'll put the address in the description.
Very cool, man. So how long... You're just do... It's cool to me because I don't do anything. You got me out of the house the other night.
Oh, yeah.
You are here and you're like trying to do stuff every night that you're here in town. You're like,
oh no, man, I don't have the energy to do that.
But you've been doing more than I usually do. We went to a comedy show the other night, then you went to that movie the next night.
Oh yeah.
And now you're doing this podcast.
Yeah.
You're just getting out and around. I don't do anything.
How often do you come down to LA for baskets?
Just once a year so far.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, actually, I came down twice this year. I came down the week before I came and stayed for, what do you call it, a marketing shoot. FX Channel brought me down for that.
Mm-hmm.
Is that just shooting, like, specific scenes so you can make trailers? Or?
Scenes for trailers.
Okay.
Like, somewhere out there, there's a picture of me sitting beside this horse. This big old horse is laying there beside me.
Very awesome.
Sitting out in the middle of the arena with all my whiskey bottles around me. Because this season, Eddie addresses his drinking problem.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's the season's airing right now.
Yeah.
I haven't even seen it yet. I can't wait.
I can't give any of that up.
Yeah. Sure, sure.
Wait, are you saying you personally cannot give up drinking, or you can't give any of those secrets away?
No.
Yeah, Eddie gets too fucked up.
Yeah, he does. That's like what it's so truthful though about the show. I'm from Oklahoma, and like I know so many dudes like Eddie. So it's like, oh man, this guy, it's very, it's like pretty close, but still bizarrely funny.
Yeah.
I love that show so much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually like this sort of, I've always been like drawn to that same like sort of dark humor where it's like, it's so horribly real in everything that's happening. And then it's like, you can't help but laugh at it because it's like, you've lived this, you've seen it, you know, stuff like that.
Well, and plus Zach Galifianakis is dealing with it in, like, the worst way possible. Mm. It's like, this. It's pretty good stuff.
Yeah. So this, speaking of non-disclosure and not spoiling different projects, you mentioned earlier you have another sort of indie film project coming up in December. Can you talk about that at all, or is that
Know the name of it.
Okay.
Crystal just, we got to hollering back and forth a little bit the other night, you know, not hollering mad, but
yeah,
Facebook, hollering shouts back and forth. And her terminology for it was that when I got back to Portland, I was hers, that I was her fighting dog on camera. And I wrote something back that I hope my opponent was a miniature Yorkie with rheumatism. So, I have no idea.
So you're just getting into something. Yeah. This is, dude, you're like, I mean, I'm looking like this is what I want my future to be. Just like continually doing projects and continually getting after it. That's awesome.
And it's that idea that, like, you know, the one job, especially for actors, but I think people in entertainment in all field, like, it's always that one job that leads to the next one. You know, once you sort of meet someone who sees, like, what you can do, they're going to want to have you in the next project and so on and so forth, and just kind of like snowballs. It's really, I mean, it's amazing. Congratulations. I'm glad to hear that you're working again and like getting.
Well, I guess she has in mind a film, but we talked about maybe trying to make some dances together.
Okay.
And one of her ideas was 3-3-3. And I think she played along the idea of, you know, you put all of this time into making a project, and that the media experts to market it cut it down to 3 minutes and 33 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Like that's what they do to a 45, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then, you know, then Decker says, no, 45s, we need them cut down to about 211 these days.
Yeah.
You know.
Everything's getting chopped.
Yeah, that's true.
So are you guys going to make something that's 3 minutes and 33 seconds?
So I'm not sure what she has in mind for that, but 3-3-3. One of the things that I would like to see done in a dance or something is the Dada movement of post-World War I. You see, that's all of the artists in Europe, you know, like in the Ukraine in particular, in the Baltic states and Germany, things were just unbearable for them. It was horrible. They were being persecuted. you know, homophobic persecution, and just, you know. Anyway, they had to go on the move, migration, and that was called the Dada movement. I don't know how it got that term, but it was called Dadaism in its time. And all the artists started to migrate, and that's what brought contemporary modern dance over to this country, was the artists, dancers, they call them barefoot dancers, because contemporary modern, you know, was still very much based on ballet, but the new thought was, why bind the feet?
Okay.
So that came to be the term for contemporary modern dance artists, and they migrated to America. But anyway, during that term, you see, I think that when they recruited armies for World War I, the recruits, many of them were like second or third generation people from the areas they were going to kill their kinsmen. And I think the rallying cry somehow instilled in the mind of licking trigger and going back to the old country to lick trigger, kill Germans, and eat jelly. And I think it has to do with the terminology that Western teaching put in the minds of young males through the recruiting process of a, you know, of a rapture act.
Yeah.
Of, you know, licking a trigger.
Yeah.
And I want to express that in dance.
Wow. I would love to see that expressed in dance.
And I haven't completely wrapped this out with Crystal yet, but I think she might be the one to tell about this. She might know I'm thinking that because I've already... Lord Pimbleton was the one who just went into a rage when Maud Allan emulated Salome, the woman who did the serpentine dance for what was it, Caesar or Saul, King Saul, I think it was, and brought him the head of John the Baptist.
Okay.
Well, in the 20s, Maud Allan reenacted that dance, and the male military establishment in England just came unglued, and this guy named Noel Pimbleton, who was the guy who made the Royal Air Force, you know, his family built airplanes, and he got elected to Parliament, and just war hawk to the mark, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
He called her a witch. He said, she's a cult witch. She's a leader of a,
oh my God,
the cult of the Clitoris.
Are you serious?
Yeah, Jesus Christ.
This was out of a contemporary history, a contemporary modern dance class, guys. Wow. This is not my raving lunatic ideas.
I mean, yeah, it sounds like his raving lunatic ideas.
Yeah. But anyway, I wanted to create a dance or a theater piece about that.
That sounds really rad.
I mean, the struggle between military and art, right? Yeah. Like, boiled down into,
Lord
like...
Lord Noel Pimbleton was the man's name. And he berated England for years because England was slow to make the RAF a separate branch of the military. Yeah. He didn't want them attached to their damn army. The army didn't know anything about flying.
I love that you're also just like, the next project could be a theater piece, because she just made this film and stuff, but what you're thinking is a dance theater piece. That's amazing to me. That's like, that,
That's really amazing.
Anyway, that's what I'm looking forward to run by her. We're going to hook up when I get back. We've been communicating, so.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that'll be cool. Well, is there anything else where we're at? I mean, we just hit an hour. We were chatting it up. Anything we need to plug? Baskets we covered. Covered you were in Portlandia. We talked about Vicious, the one you were in.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Is there, where can people find Vicious? Because that actually sounds like a pretty great movie. I want to watch that.
It's being viewed for free in Portland right now.
Okay.
But if you look up Jason Rosenblatt,
okay,
I can write that down for you. You can find him with no problem at all on Facebook. And he can tell you, give you links to see it. It's a good movie.
I saw, if you just look up Ernest Adams on IMDb, it comes up.
Yeah.
I found it on there.
Yeah, I found myself on there.
So,
that one with me in the old blue chambray shirt. When I I got all teary-eyed. I look just like my daddy.
Oh, really?
Oh, man, yeah.
Old cowboys, right?
Yeah.
That's crazy. And you grew up in in the Portland area, so you still live there?
Well, out of Portland, she's had rip all over the
place. Well, I was just going to say, you still...
Up and down the coast and in the valley and up in White Salmon, Washington.
But you kind of stayed close to where you're from.
Yeah.
Still, and like... Because I live here, I'm from Oklahoma, and I would wish I could still stay somewhere like that. But it's just amazing you get to do the job you're doing, but live where you'd like to live.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just pretty great. So you're kind of living the dream right now.
Somewhat, yeah. Yeah, I hope it has a long run.
Me too.
Yeah, me too, man.
That's awesome. Ernie, thanks so much. I'm sorry, I just called you Ernie. Ernest. That was way too familiar.
Ernie's fine.
Fine. Good, I got lucky. Cause
All right, man. Well, that was Indie Craig, guys.
Yeah, thanks so much for coming and talking to us. This is great.
Clay. You bet. That was fun.